CONF28 takeaways. So all of us were at this conference in Gloucester over the weekend on Saturday just passed, and it was a great opportunity to meet in person. So this is the first MatsCon takeaways for an in-person conference. We've done them for online ones, and this is MatsChat Live, so it means the live experience. We are streaming right now on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn as well. LinkedIn is a new one, so wherever you are, just drop in a comment, ask us a question, get involved in the discussion. This is what makes it really good live. So we've got a lovely panel here who are we were all at MatsCon, so we'll just do a very quick round of introductions. So I'll start with myself. I'm Atul Tarana. I'm an online tutor and teach maths from Key Stage 1 to A-level maths. We'll start with you, Dave.
I'm Dave Tushingham, a lead practitioner in a school in Bristol. Run a book club with Rhiannon, and just had an absolute ball at it, the Maths Conf this weekend. So really looking forward to talking about it. Thanks for having us on, Atul.
Pleasure again. And your first time on MatsChat Live, Helen?
Yeah, got strong-armed into it. First time on MathChat Live, first time at an in-person MathConf this time. So I'm Helen Osmond. I tutor primarily A-level and GCSE maths, and I'm in North Wiltshire, so not far down the road from Dave.
Excellent. Look forward to your perspective and your first one as well, Gareth. Welcome to MatsChat Live.
Yes, thank you, Atul. Yes, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm Gareth Evans. I'm head of mathematics at a school in North Wales called the School of Creighton. We're a Welsh medium school, and as Dave said, it was a thoroughly enjoyable day on Saturday, and again, looking forward to discussing. I remember my first one, I think it was the ultimate Pi Day back in 2015, so they've been very successful, and it's a pleasure to have been on Saturdays again.
Great. Look forward to hearing. And talking about your workshop as well. And a regular by now, Matt.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Matt's man. I'm just a normal maths teacher at North Bromsgrove High School, working with the likes of Mel and Seeger, if you have been before. I did a workshop on preparing getting Year 11s ready for A-level maths. So I've been to many online and quite a few in person. Looking forward to chat more about that.
Brilliant. And finally on to Rhiannon, who in some ways made it all happen.
Oh, I think I did very little. But hi, I'm Rhiannon Rainbow. I'm School Improvement Lead at Maths for the Greenshaw Learning Trust. I do the book club with Dave Tushingham. And Matt, there is no such thing as just a maths teacher. All right, please, there's no such thing as just a teacher. It's an absolutely invaluable thing to do. So thank you so much. And yeah. Hi, everybody, this evening. For me, it's still a little bit of a blur, I'm afraid. So, yes. Do you want me to go straight in, Atul?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just ask because I think what's really interesting about you is that you basically was one of your schools hosting it, and you weren't even aware of MathsConf until everything went online, the whole pandemic thing. So, I'd love to hear your whole journey from not hearing about MathsConf at all to the MathsConf, the community online, to eventually hosting it.
Well, yeah, I started getting more involved in these things and being more aware of it when I joined Twitter. I joined Twitter a little while ago and then actually got involved in Twitter just over 2.5 years ago. And it was during sort of COVID and everything else, and everything had shut down. And I've got children. For a little while, I was a single mum. So for me, the idea of going away on a weekend or doing some CPD that caused me to have to travel, it was just something I'd never done and I'd never thought that I could do. And I didn't realize what I was missing out on. So my first ever MathsConf was one of the online ones. And then I just got absolutely hooked because the community, and I started with it virtually. So MathsConf 28 is only my second ever in-person conference at Maths Conference. And for example, Research Ed was my first ever Research Ed last September. It's all brand new to me and it's just incredible. So after going to Ashton in Kent in the autumn to an in-person one, I just thought, I've got to give something back. I have to find an opportunity to give something back and to support where I can. And so when Mark McCourt had put on Twitter, when somebody was saying, hi, Mark, have you got dates for next year? Because people are always really keen to know when the next ones are. He said, we've got some dates, but we're having, it was in, he put in his tweet, they were having difficulty securing venues. And I am denied. And I sent a couple of DMs that I then deleted before I actually pressed send. And then I think one evening, probably after a glass of wine, because that's usually how Dave and I roll when we send these messages to people to do things that are a little bit different, I just said, hi, Mark, if I can help at all, I'd love to. I've got a few schools and let me know. And then after a little while, he got back in touch and then it happened. So for me, Saturday was a little bit of a blur, a huge blur. I was like a, I don't know, an excited puppy, really, I think. I didn't sleep for ages. I was just absolutely loving the whole day. And for those of you who came to the session, which was very last thing on the day, I think by that point I was a bit of an empty shell and struggling to stay awake because I'd had so little sleep that week. But it was simply incredible. And I think it's one of the proudest moments for me to be able to host and provide that opportunity for the mass community to get together in one of my schools. That's going to stay with me for a very long time. So all I can say to anybody out there is, as much as people will say thank you for hosting it at your school, I did very, very little because the complete maths team are utterly awesome. They know what they're doing. They turn up. I thought they might need my help. They absolutely did not. I was just there offering coffees or getting in the way and wearing my shirt the wrong way around, which Rob thought was hilarious because I was that nervous. And they were just incredible. I think that it took them about an hour the night before to do that bit of the setup and then a little bit the next morning. And then you saw the day happened as it did. And it is just one of those things that if you are able to offer or there is an opportunity to, then take them up on it because it's a great thing to do and for our community. And I know it helps to keep the costs down and it also helps to take the maths conference to all of these different places that might not normally have that same opportunity, like in our schools. So, yeah, I don't know if that helped answer your questions at all, but yeah. I can tell you I've had more sleep now since last week, but I'm still on that sort of hangover bit because I still can't quite believe it happened.
No, well done. Really, really well done. And we were just talking earlier that, just to kind of pick up from your story, that it is very difficult when it's in a different part of the country to come around and actually go and... you know, in Helen's case, it happened to be fairly local to you. When I went to my first MathsCon, it happened to be in London, so the buzz kind of got, and I went then. But once I went to MathsCon 10 in London, I pretty much went to all of them, the rest of them in England. So we see the kind of value it is through the community that we've got built. And you think, actually, this is worth the pain of like taking the weekend off and arranging, you know, childcare or whatever else you have to do. And go for it. So, I'll go wherever. If this is one in Bristol, where you are, Dave, I'll go there. I'll go to North Wales. I'll go because it's just, for me, it's well worth it.
And for everybody, everybody's going to have a first time at MathsCon, and it is scary, especially if you're going on your own or you've not been before and you don't know the community, but it is an amazing thing to do and it is very, very welcoming and very, very supportive. You know, I was absolutely shattered in the session that we did at the end of the day, Dave, but nobody heckled me. Nobody threw things at me to try and wake me up. But it is a really, really supportive community. So, and if you're going to be on your own, then say, hi, I'm going on my own. Can somebody say hello when I get there? And we will. And we will scoop you up with open arms and show you the wonderful people that you'll get to meet. So, yeah, like you, Atul.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'd love to hear your perspective, Helen, as a first timer. Like, I think we've all been at AMATS Corner at some point. So, well, yeah, what was it like for you from the Friday and the Saturday?
Yeah, the Friday, I didn't realize quite how tired I was going to be after Friday night. But yeah, from walking in to the Wetherspoons and getting pounced on by other mathematicians and tutors that I'd met virtually over the last 2 years, obviously COVID has, I think, opened our eyes a bit more to the wider community. We're not just necessarily stuck in our geographical areas now. We are Zoom. We all know about Zoom now compared to 2 years ago. But this time we had to walk in and see people, legs and all. We decided that we all have legs, or majority of us had legs, which was kind of like, yeah, there's more than just the top half. But where? We felt so welcome. And I'm not a maths teacher in a classroom. I am a maths tutor, supporting mainly one-on-one. But never have I felt like that was a barrier when we came. Sometimes we can feel like we're not the same. We don't have to manage the same behaviour management, classroom management skills, all of those sorts of things we don't have on our plates. And sometimes that separates us. But this wasn't that. There was four or five of us there. I think there were tutors, maybe six. Just do the one-on-one or the one-to-three. And we felt so welcome all the way through the day, meeting people and learning, which was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, just to echo Rhiannon's point, there's no such thing as just a math teacher or just a math tutor or just, as Mark McCord said right at the end, together collectively we'll be impacting thousands of students when we go back, and that's something to be incredible. It's something to be proud of. It's so something that can only be done when we get together. Yeah, we can move on straight to the workshops. Any favorites or just any thoughts whatsoever, and can kick it off. Yeah, with the.
I'll say about Jonathan Hall's workshop that you were in also, Atoll. I just thought there was the structured variation grids were just fantastic to just get you thinking about those sort of the conceptual understanding whilst giving students a great amount of practice. And the idea of just giving them a grid with four or five filled in, and they could just straight away, the students would be able to go and fill in all of those blanks and answer the questions as well, because they can see the pattern of the questions as well as getting the practice in the questions. I just straight away went, wow, you know, it's just such a wonderful resource, MathSport, to be able to sort of tune into it, take the topics that are going to support your students, and to be able to really sort of dig a little bit deeper around the processes that you might be teaching in the classroom. It just made me think I need to do more of this.
Yeah, I was in Jonathan's workshop as well, and it just comes across how generous he is with his time, and then he emphasizes if there's anything you think about that should be added to the website, then it's a job I can do. It's just an amazing resource. I mean, I use it in the department practically on a daily basis. The manipulatives, all the different worksheets, it's a treasure trove, and I think every maths teacher across the land. It's just so grateful to have that resource freely available, and as I say, it's used daily.
Yeah, incredible resource, really. I mean, very, very grateful, and it just keeps adding more and more things, and it just gets better. Yeah, actually, I used the variation theory grid pretty much straight away as I got back, and I think that's one of the testaments to a maths contract. Something in there that you can just, even if it's just one thing, and it's a really, and what I like about when he did talk about this was he didn't say like, I've been using structured variation grids forever. He said, I'm trying it out, I've just started, and that makes me feel like if there's something I've started and I think is semi-working, I kind of want to share that and get the feedback, and so he's almost saying, actually, yeah, I've just started it. I want to see what it's going to be like. I'll release this resource to the public. And so basically you test it out with the classrooms, and you all give me the feedback, and I'll keep improving. And that's, I think that's like the whole giving spirit of the community, and Johnny especially. D's online, D Greg. I was stretched in Jonathan's workshop on structured variation grids. Yeah, That's probably.
I couldn't pick. I was looking at the first six workshops, and I couldn't pick which one to go to. There were so many good choices. The disadvantage of in-person ones compared to the online is that you can only get to one place at one time. Because as far as I know, they haven't figured out cloning or transportation and all those sorts of things. I didn't get to the variation one, and I'm going to have to see if I can grab the slides or something, because it would be, sounds like it was amazing. I did the big picture one, and it comes up a lot within in the tutoring, is fitting it all in. Where does this connect to that? I think the example was fractions from the session. But if you've got fractions, actually before fractions, you need lowest common multiples and highest common factors. So before that, you need actually multiples and factors, and you need primes to deal with that. And then you need, and there was just sort of like, how did it all, it was a lovely network that he had on the screen, as Stuart did. And yeah, that was really interesting to figure out how does it all fit in? Where do the bits go? Because at least sometimes students come to me and they go, we did simultaneous equations, but not have a clue where that fits into the rest of algebra and why we do it and what we're doing with it. Quadratics was another big one. We discussed it. I'm running a tutors hub for math tutors to get access to some CPD and learning. And we had a session on quadratics and we were all over the place. What do they need before? Where are we going with it? Where can we fit it in? That was probably the most buzzing hour on Zoom that I've had in a while. So that's the, yeah, I really enjoyed that big picture session in the first one.
That just reminds me of the PGCE days. We always talk about the big picture. So love a bit of that. Where did I go to my first workshop? So I went to the AQA's one. So AQA exams, are you ready? So it's always interesting take when you have the AQA people and you have Pearson examiners as well. So it's always kind of like, you know, this kind of inter rivalry as such, you know, what should you use as a calculator? What constitutes as, you know, justifying your answer and all that? So that was, it's always, do you know what? I know there has been debates before about, you know, should there be one exam board or should it be multiple exam boards? But, you know, hats off to them, you know, whatever exam board they are, AQA, NXO, OCR, Educus, slash Welsh board, you know, what they do, you know, I think they've really stepped up their game, I think, since the pandemic and giving so much support that we, you know, I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of not just math teachers, but, you know, although when I say just math, I think, you know, that's my own secret, so just math, so there you go. But I'm sure it speaks for pretty much everyone that we are really grateful for what they do and just hats off and keep up the great work.
And I don't know if it happened, it will have happened previously. I wasn't so aware of it, but they've all gotten together, haven't they, the exam boards recently, more so and communicated more so with all of the challenges we've got. And I think even just hearing when they were explaining about the shadow papers that AQA have produced,
yeah,
that they've done with Graham Cumming, who would have been, who has previously done a lot of work with EdXL. So you can already hear that they are talking to one another. And they all want students to do the best they can, don't they? Nobody is out there trying to trip students up and trying to trick them and, you know, trying to be mean or anything. They just want the best for their students. So the more they can talk to each other, the more they can share, and the more we can hear from them, the better. I mean, it would be nice to have one exam board, but then at the same time, we're not all the same either. It's also really good to have choice, isn't it? So
yeah.
I don't know where I stand with that. I didn't really go to a first session. I obviously didn't know who to choose, but I was going to go to Jonathan Hall's, and I just couldn't sit down, really. His room was full, and I wanted to make sure that anybody else who came in could go in there. But I had that position where I just walked around all of the rooms and I saw the brilliant stuff that was happening everywhere, and it was just fantastic to see all of these amazing opportunities. And as you said, it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from. There's no barriers here. Everybody is welcome in the maths community. If you have an interest and you want to get involved, it's there, not just to attend, but also to run the sessions. And that's one of the things I really, really like about it, is everybody has a voice. There's no, ulterior motive. There's no agenda. It's an opportunity for anybody to share. And then if you think, we've had people who have been in their teacher training sharing, we've had people who are incredibly experienced and have been teaching mathematics or involved in the world of mathematics education for a very long time, also sharing their presentations. And we all have the same platform, the same voice, the same opportunity. And I think that is an incredible thing as well. So, yeah, I just think that was worth sharing. But I didn't really go to a first session, I'm afraid. They were just, it was brilliant to see how many people were in there though. And there was hardly anybody who wasn't in a session all day either, because the rooms were just full of fantastic opportunities for people.
Yeah, and AQA are one of the main sponsors of the whole conference, which is why Andrew Taylor gives the introductory talk. And it's, you know, if it wasn't for AQA, they wouldn't be able to have the tickets at such a low price as well. So, yeah, it's a really incredible contribution. And I think Andrew Taylor said he's been involved with the MathsConf right from the very beginning, MathsConf 1. So.
It is an incredible thing they do to support that to happen. It really, really is.
That's all. From going from the first session, we sort of missed out a little bit the game of More or Less that we played before we started our sessions as well, which was just absolutely fantastic. So for people who don't know the game, the More or Less game, and as in the main hall, we all stood up and had to make our predictions of these two statements, whether it's going to be more or whether it's going to be less. And sort of went down to the last three people who won their prize. It was just so much fun just to start off with, just to get us warmed up and in the mood for the session for the day. I thought the whole session, the whole way that it was structured was just fantastic. But from moment one, people were just then sort of, you know, running out of the hall to their first sessions, excited for what they were going to get involved with, and weren't disappointed. But I just thought we should start maybe with that as well.
It was like a giant game of heads and shoulders, knees and toes, just with only two bits, heads and hips.
It was really, really good fun, though. And I loved the way that Rob got Johnny up there as well to do it. And I think there were photos of it out there as well. So it's just, it breaks the ice, doesn't it? It gets people laughing, it gets people involved. And that's something Rob did very, very well on the day. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, normally they do the speed dating thing where delegates have just meet someone and talk about their best mathematical idea over three short speed dates. But there was no mixing, just not just yet. I mean, there was a big hall of all of us anyway. But yeah, Rob's well done for saving the day with that one. And just getting people warmed up, because obviously quite a few of us were out the Friday night, so we were already socializing. But if you arrive there straight on a Saturday, if you're first ever MathsConf like I did once, it can feel quite jarring. So I think Rob, with his energy and that the game, just set it up really well for after that, yeah. So my second one was Nathan Day's interviewing, Don't Stop Interviewing. I don't know if anyone else went to that one, and any thoughts around that?
I went to part of it, and well, he started it off with singing as well. And you always know Nathan Day's sessions are going to be impressive. And he had it in sort of the conference room as well, didn't he? Rather than a classroom, which is what he was expecting. So the way he thinks and pulls things together and is able to articulate and share that so other people can follow as well. I think it's just, he's a really, really impressive young man. He really, really is. And he stood up. I was impressed at the start. He stood up and sung in front of everybody. And we all sang back as well. But there was a lot of buzz after that session, and I wasn't in there for much of it, because I wanted to make sure all the others are okay. So I'm really interested in hearing more about that one.
Yeah, it was incredible all the way through, and I mean, the singing is right up my street anyway. So to mix two of my favorite things in the world, maths and singing, so I was in there straight away. But it's very, very intelligently thought out. It's his website, interwovenmaths.com. I mean, what he was saying is basically, he started off with that example of Hannah's Sweets, which was a GCSE question a few years ago, and it mixed quadratics with probability. And I think his point was that actually a lot of exam questions and a lot of the idea behind being a mathematician is the interconnection between all the topics and how things are linked together. And it's almost certainly going to be that in some papers you'll find questions that do literally interweave different topics together. And I know as a tutor, I can be guilty of this as well. I just like to drill into one thing, like problem fixing, drill that topic. But this interviewing brings in lots of benefits. So I gave on my blog, I gave an example where one of my tutees was covering all the four operations on fractions, and then they moved on in the scheme of work to linear sequences. And I kind of wanted to, well, do both really. So I just did linear sequences with fractions in them. So and that's just a short bit of interviewing. And that requires us to be creative. Like, and he got this exercise where he chose to talk, you know, topics like surds, money and geometry, and then just use the three topics and see what questions he can come up with. But Nathan's done quite a lot of the hard work. He's got it on his website. And again, just like Johnny's MathSpot website, it's open source. If we come up with any questions, it's going to all be put there again. Yeah.
I was in there a little bit partway through the session as well, and what I really liked when the bit I was in is he was also explaining what is not interweaving. I think he called it chaining, and he said it's very different. Chaining is not the same, and he sort of held your hand through that understanding of it as well. And I thought that was really helpful. But as you say, he's got it all on that fantastic website of his too. And I think there was another website launched that day as well, wasn't there? Was it Dave Taylor launched his website on backward fading too? And just these free resources for us to use are incredible.
Yeah, he's got a commentary on his work. He's actually released a PowerPoint in public on Twitter, and it's also on. He's got a Twitter thread, so that's another place. If you didn't watch it, it's there. So Dee's already put the link in. Thanks, Dee. Will the slides from the workshop be available? Yes, I believe so. Yeah, they will be released soon, Dee. Yeah.
Yeah, they emailed us earlier the other day, didn't they, asking for all of our slides. I keep trawling through Twitter trying to find where people are sharing bits and pieces, but just to be able to sort of have them for myself to refer to, but also to share with my staff, because as I think you said, Helen, it's such a shame that we have to select a small number to be able to go to, because we want to be able to go to them all, don't we? But I suppose that makes us also want to go back another time.
Yeah, can we have some of these on repeat? Anyone that did one that wants to do it again next time and save themselves having to prepare? There we go. There's a reusing resources, always a good one. I want to go to that one. but again, I couldn't choose. So I did the working memory, because I've got students that have poor working memory. They're fine with the concept, but then actually getting them to use it on without in a question takes a little bit more nudging sometimes. And I have to appreciate the math dress that was going on there. That was a really nice bit of clothing from Caroline. But yeah,
was just that the jumpsuit one?
The jumpsuit with all of the equations, and there were a few flying around of people that had mathematical clothing, and I salute you. That was brilliant, brilliantly done. But yeah, especially for students who have low working memory, often with additional needs, but not necessarily exclusively with those with additional needs, but having sort of like a five-point step, five-step points, something like that, you can tell it's Thursday evening, my brain is switching off. But just sort of like five clear things. You do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, bang, there's your solution. Just so that then they can take out all of the stress of it and be able to follow the steps through. So they've got clear, I do one thing, then I do the next thing, then I do the next thing, was one of her suggestions. And then lots of visual clues so that they can kind of nudge ideas. If they can see, there was a picture of Cluedo. That was the hint on that one, a picture of Tim Curry in Clue. But if you've got a hint, then you can take the next step as to where you go. You don't have to expend quite so much working memory in figuring out what's next. So that was, yeah, I'm always fascinated about how the brain learns. So yeah, there we go.
The power of 5D says, I think that was a workshop. Yeah.
If I can just say, Astor, as well, I felt exactly the same about, you know, wanting to go to so many of these sessions and can they be repeated. I genuinely said to Ree, we were running the session together and Kieran Mackles had done it at the same time, and I said, is it okay if you do our session? Because I don't want to be at our session, I want to go there. It was, I mean, you know, no offence, Ree, I mean, it was lovely, it was great, but I just wanted to be at Kieran's one. But the one that stuck out in my mind is one that I think I probably took most from out of all the amazing sessions were there, were Catherine's one on ratio tables. And I think she was wearing one of those dresses that you speak of as well. It's absolutely fantastic.
It's called the Catherine, that dress is, as well.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. I mean, it's made for her. But it's, yeah, the ratio tables were something which I've used before, and I went in there feeling that I sort of knew what they were and was sort of going on to the session to be a little bit reassured. But I went in there and I just thought, you know, wow, I've not been using them to the level that I could do, and there's so much more I could be doing with these tables, and so much more I could be thinking about. It was a session that looked at how maybe you could look at equivalent fractions or working out the percentage of a number. You could do speed, distance, time problems, and there was you could just go on and on with that list of where you could use them. But it was just the way that Catherine brought it back every time, looked at this very different problem, then set up this 2x2 grid. The numbers went in. We had the same thoughts about looking at the links between, the multiplicative links between the numbers or within the numbers. We searched for the user-friendly multiplicative link as well, which I found I didn't always naturally go to. When I looked at the person next to me, Josh, who was who's in our department as well, and I'd look at his work and go, oh yeah, that was the easier way to do that problem. But it really started to get me to think how I explain that to my students now. What do I say to them when I say, look, we've gone between with our numbers, but let's look within and let's see if we can see a link across rather than down. And it was just the simplicity in which it was delivered just made me realise sort of how I could be sort of, you know, supporting my students through so many different topics where they got just one procedure that they're going to use to have success in them all and understand what it means, this multiplicative relationship. So yeah, I thought that was a fantastic session.
No, it was great. I think you have to leave, Rhiannon. Yes, you have to do parent duty, so thanks. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm ever so sorry to go and to miss this, but thank you all so much for letting me be involved, and I look forward to seeing you at the next one soon. Take care.
See you again, yeah. All right.
See you, Rhiannon.
Yeah, on proportional reason, I mean, Pete Mattock did a Maths Chat Live, and he said, in the essence, like school-level mathematics until GCSE at least, proportional reasoning is like probably the big idea, right? It just appears as unitization and ratios and fractions and all sorts of various guises and the ratio table, which I really wanted to go to, but I can't remember. I was in your workshop, Gareth. I think I was they were both together. I mean, yours was so inspiring. Just the history of the equal signs, the way it was narrated. The whole, I didn't know Robert Record had so many different books, and also the history from the 10B, the market, the hand symbols, the way they traded. So maybe you can talk about that a little bit as well, just for those who weren't there, like how.
Yes, I mean, it was my first time speaking at a conference, and it was the butterflies were going in the stomach beforehand. But I think with everything, and for anyone that's thinking about speaking at a conference for the first time, you soon settle down, and then it's very welcoming, and the audience was very responsive, and it was a thoroughly enjoyable experience. And yes, I talked about Robert Ricourt's history, so back to the 16th century, and his life story, which could really be turned into a Hollywood film, I reckon. It's so many twists and turns from beginning to end. And he's most famous, of course, for introducing the equal sign, the pair of parallel lines. But his story is much more than that. He's written books on number, geometry, algebra, before the unknown, the symbol that we use so much now, the X symbol, was even considered to be a symbol for the unknown. There's a table of symbols in a book for different powers. So that particular time, X squared or X cubed or X to the power 4 wasn't used. There are different symbols for different powers, and as such, it was really complicated to understand. And that particular algebra book was a flop. It didn't sell at all. Whereas his number book was a bestseller for centuries. And he had a very grisly ending. I think my introduction on the program talked about his grisly ending. But yes, I'd be more than happy to come back another time to talk in depth on that particular story.
Yeah, and anyone who presented on this panel, I definitely had love to have you talk more about it, and I've invited Nathan as well. So that's, yeah, I really liked, it really was like a full, like a film, and it was such a long life in which he did. Well, he died at 46, actually, not a lot, maybe accomplished a lot of things. But really liked, I mean, I like loads of things in it. But there is is it The Ground of Arts, where he's got the master and scholar narrative, which I would argue is the first mathematics. It is the first mathematics book, isn't it? It's really it's like the master and scholar. It's tutoring, it's one-on-one, and he's playing this imaginary narrative where, and it's quite funny as well, because he asks the tutee a question. He goes, hmm? And then he asks another question. He goes, hmm? And then he starts like laying into this imaginary tutee. I don't even know what the line is.
I think he gets frustrated. The master gets frustrated about how the scholar's answering his questions. And then I think the answer is a poke full of plums. So he threw in a bit of humour, and there was all sorts in the book. There was poetry in the book. There was not just your traditional maths textbook with examples and then explanation. And so it was wildly popular back in the 16th century. As I say, many editions were published long after his death, for centuries. So, and as you say, it was probably the first popularly available maths textbook in the English language. The very first one, and it contains the very first equations, the very first explanation of the number system. He went back to basics. He talked about the place value. He talked about even the symbols that we are all familiar with now. There's a 0 to 9. They weren't familiar at the time. People were still using Roman numerals to do their calculations, which was very cumbersome. So there was a battle between the abacists and the algorists. At the time, people were still using their Roman numerals, and then this new mathematics of using the 0 to 9, the number system that we are now so familiar with.
Yeah, I love that wood carving. There's another one I know. It's called Typus Arithmetica, where because the Roman numerals system has been around the longest of any, actually, it's the most robust that has survived history for so long. And I've looked this up, and like, we in Britain, we fought it for a long time, the Hindu-Arabic numeral system, the Roman numerals, and they're still around, right? We're still using them now. And it's not a sudden change. It's taking centuries, and I think Robert Ricourt has a huge part to play in this.
Certainly. I mean, as I say, I thoroughly enjoyed giving a session, and has been commented so far during my particular session, I wanted to see at least another 3 other sessions during my session. I think one of the ones I did enjoy during the second period of the day was the one on the A-level mathematics.
Yeah.
I think, Matt, you were in that one as well.
Yeah, I think, where we sat together.
I think we were on the same table, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. I mean, that was... Oh, that was... in some ways, I think the ones I've chosen, I think I consciously was like, when I chose workshops, I was like, oh, which ones would... interlink with each other. So I went from AQA A level to sequencing with A level with Rob and Sam. They were brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It does make us ponder in terms of, like, you know, do we still teach to the textbook? I mean, I think about it myself and I question myself about it because, you know, I've got a group with, so I've got a year 12 group with three teachers. So, I mean, I happen to be, you know, there is the old saying, like, oh, you know, who's the stats expert? Who's the mechanics expert? Who's the pure expert? And you kind of divvy up there and divide up there. And that's like, okay, that's your curriculum plan. But then I think there was a poll or something saying, like, you know, should A-level teachers be fluent in every single area of the curriculum? Which is a very interesting question. So, you know, I admit that, you know, I'm not the strongest in mechanics, but then I kind of force myself as a teacher because I do a little bit of online tutoring. So, you know, and that's forced me to do a CPD with mechanics. So, I think what was really interesting was, like, how... there's a lot of year 13 content that can be incorporated into year 12. And, you know, we'll take, for example, vectors, for example, year 12 curriculum, at least for the Pearson exam board, is essentially 2D vectors, but year 13 is 3D vectors. Well, why don't you just combine them into one and just call it 2D and 3D vectors and put them at the start of the year? You know, after I went to the conference, I mean, following Monday, I was speaking to my other A-level colleague and, you know, I was saying to him, like, oh, yeah, how did MassCom go? And I said, oh, yeah, well, I found this session to be really interesting in terms of sequencing content. And he was literally saying to me, I was thinking the same thing too. He wasn't there at MassCom, but he was like, I'm thinking, you know, I was like, yeah, why don't we just teach vectors in year 12? Why don't we just do radians in year 12 to accommodate further mathematicians because they have to do radians early on with complex numbers? I mean, it's obviously there's no one right method to do it, but it's a great discussion to see that actually there is, you know, there is still flexibility to change. And, you know, I put my hands to, we are still, I'm still guilty that we kind of the year 12 onto year 12 because the external exam, the AS exam, is a really good way to at least keep, you know, senior leaders happy with a concrete grade, with concrete material. It's that's what it is. But I think, you know, what we discussed was really interesting. I think the Welsh board, whatever, you know, modular, linear, we had that question, you know, should this actually be really interesting to ask everyone here in the panel, you know, should A-level exams be linear or modular? What is better for the students? I'll be interested to hear your thoughts.
I mean, exactly. I mean, we had that discussion, and thinking back to when I started teaching, we had the modular system, the core modules, and then the statistics and the mechanics. And I guess one thing I would say, during those years, the numbers studying mathematics shot up.
Yeah.
I mean, we had great participation and then also great results. I mean, students tended to enjoy it. But was it because that the exams were in the end maybe too predictable? Certainly in Wales, we knew what question one was going to be, what question two was going to be. So it's a different beast now, isn't it? The linear system, it's that exam at the end. I guess it's an open question whether that's better for the pupils, better for the teachers. But we had a great discussion also on how to start the A-level course. Do we start with something that traditionally perhaps came from those core one modules? Mm-hmm. I was talking about maybe coordinate geometry. But then for those pupils who have studied level two mathematics, that additional qualification is starting with that, maybe throwing them to the false sense of security, thinking, oh, A-level maths is going to be quite easy. It's quite familiar. Do we start with something that's not in that level two specification? So it was really an interesting decision about how you structure the course, what comes first. And it's just, as you say, Matt, what can be clumped together.
Mm.
because a scheme of work is really a juggernaut, isn't it? Even if we're changing the whole exam system, it takes a lot of years for things to change.
Yeah, and I think we talked about how limitations is, I mean, staff is actually probably the biggest barrier. You know, are all members of staff comfortable with what they're teaching? You know, if they're not comfortable with teaching that first, then it's like, how do you convince them to change their mind? So, it's really interesting. I mean, I have, when I did my A-levels, I did it through the modular system, because that's pre-2017. So, post-2004, so probably most of us here, well, I would say most of us here probably would have done the module A, or some might have done curriculum 2000 or even circa, which would have been the linear way. It was someone, I can't remember her name, but she was mentioned how we've kind of gone full circle. We've kind of gone back to the 1990s with the current A-level curriculum.
I think... it makes me think of retrieval practice when I hear the modular versus linear conversation. And I think going through the modular system myself, one of the positives for me was the accessibility. It was a big step to go from GCSE to A-level for myself. And going into the A-level module and knowing that it's just these one sort of set of isolated skills I'm going to be learning, and then I'm going to be assessed on it. And then I can sort of park those ideas, and I can... There was some building on, but there were certainly some things that I learned that were very isolated, and I could then park for a long period of time. And so it's really good for the motivation in terms of the success factor. In terms of then going on and doing a degree in mathematics, I felt that I had gaps in my knowledge then. So it depends what you want to get from it, really. But if it's about becoming a real mathematician, I think the linear system is better for that. That was my experience anyway, because the linear system... would support coming back and retrieving some of that information, and then when you go into the sort of the heavier, more complex mathematics that you want to be sort of, you know, really exploring, then you've got more in your toolkit, you can remember more, you've got more knowledge, you're going to be able to have more success. So yeah, I'd say the linear is better for becoming that true mathematician, but for me the modular system really helped with that motivation and that success you can get through taking one small bit at a time.
Yeah, it's a lack of stress as well. When you knew that if you were sitting the C1, now I have to admit, I was the first year group to sit the Cs. That dates me. I went and did my A-levels in 2005. For the year 13, I was in 2005. so, yeah, now you can all work out how old I am. we were allowed to do C1 and C2. So that was the AS year and either S1 or M1. I can't remember which one we did. Yeah. But we could come back and resit. If we happen to have a bad exam, and we all know that can happen, you could have another go at it. And I mean, you might have had to revise it yourself with a little bit of support, but actually coming back and doing C2 trigonometry after having learnt C3 trigonometry, C2 trigonometry was a doddle, because you only had the two identities to remember, and the four ones that we've been using a lot in C3. So in that respect, being able to go back, it actually helped underpin some of the later knowledge. But it did, as I agree with Dave, it did limit it. There were some topics that were, I think binomial expansion was C2 and C4, and you didn't do it anywhere else. It was just in those two modules. And then coming to use binomial expansion in further statistics at the time, and then you go, where did that go? I do remember that. I did do it at some point, and dragging it back was hard. I went to the retrieval practice, Stephen Froggatt's session, the four quadrants of retrieval practice. We had singing in that one too. Not corporate singing, but he gave us a few renditions, and the challenge was, he gave us four first lines of songs, could we do the next line? So things like Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and most of us can probably go way up high because we know the songs, but then halfway through the session he goes, which songs did I sing? And then towards the end he did it again. So by the third time of going back, we really had got them supported in. So his four quadrants were, for example, having a question from last week's topic on the board, a question from last month's topic on the board, a question from last term, and then a question from much earlier in the year. Could be linked, could not be linked, could be a straight question, could be a problem-solving, wordy-type question. But then you could sort of see, I think there were points, he had a suggestion, you could do points and have less points if you had to go less far back in your memory to draw things out. You could use it for gearing up for the next topic. If you knew that you were going to do algebraic fractions, then you might want to twig them that and get them to start retrieving the information on normal fraction work so that they're ready to take the next step. So apart from the singing, that was also great. But that was a really helpful session. A lot of the suggestions were more classroom-based, but certainly the ideas of nudging them to remember what they've done at greater intervals back in time was a nice thing to think about. And, yeah, again, how the brain works. It's fascinating.
Yeah, there's the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve, isn't it? So, like when you cover something fresh for the first time, Mark calls it the teach-do phase, in which the only objective of students is articulating back to you what you think you've taught, and it's a measure of how much of what you've transmitted has actually been received, and that's the teach-do phase. And I've covered stuff with tutees and then come back to it next week, a week later, and it's like all gone. So, you're fighting this kind of human brain in our...
Isn't that true for us too, though, yeah. As adults?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Slightly aging, well, I'm talking for myself there, getting older adults and adding own children, pets, busy lives. The first time we do something, it doesn't take long for things to get forgotten. But having to retrieve it back as adults, even then, it's
yeah. I'm doing
remind me I said that.
yeah. Well, the recording's here for that, so luckily. With singing, I'm doing a 31 song set with the busking band, and there's a lot of lyrics to remember. I'm just gonna have some sheets basically, because it takes ages. There's a lot of lyrics in one song, so.
But the songs that you really know that you have done, I imagine out of that 31, you've probably done half of them, maybe a third of them already several times. And once you get going, I mean, you might not remember the lyrics straight away, but the example was if someone goes somewhere over the rainbow, you can probably, it gives you enough of the hint to go for the next line. Or we did, I'm dreaming of a, and we all went, White Christmas, what are you on about? It's March. But yeah, there were four that I think you did, and we could all... Once the clue, the nudge had been given, we were able to pick it up and keep going. I was singing along. That was it for the rest of the day. Stuck in my head.
Great first maths conf.
One of the things that I went to, one of the workshops I went to, just taking it from the A-level conversation just had right to the other end of the spectrum, was Lisa and Abby's session. And we looked at sort of what the number five meant. So it's the idea of the five being a noun, but also thinking about sort of the fiveness of a number. And so straight away, a recommendation that they've given us that I've got, I don't know if you can see that there, but I Spy Numbers, it's been working beautifully with my two little children, just to be able to look at a page in here and just the idea that you have to try and find the number two in the picture. I was working with Kieran on this one and just sort of looking, it was the number five we were looking at, but there's a pentagon, there's a sequence that has five things in. It was really sort of eye-opening to think about sort of how our little ones think, how students, when they're introduced to numbers for the first time, think, and what we need to understand as teachers for that sort of conceptual understanding of a number. It really, as a secondary maths teacher, brought it to a level that I hadn't had experience in, and found some things quite surprising, to the point where I was asked to, with some early years maths, I was asked to rethink my answer at one point, in a very comical way. There was some work on subitizing, and the sequence was triangle numbers, and there were six dots, and we all had to describe how we counted them, and some people had moved one dot to make a rectangle, and other people had organised it another way, and I'd counted them, and so I hadn't gone through that process at all, and it was just really, really interesting for me to think about sort of how people think of the very sort of numbers on a very basic level. It almost, in a weird way, felt as complicated as some of the A-level mathematics sessions that I would have been into in the past. And so, yeah, I found that really, really interesting, and to just two people that were excellent, engaged in an audience and really knew their stuff as well. So yeah, learned loads from that session.
I think there's a lot of underpinning in the early years maths that we don't necessarily twig or notice as secondary specialists. Mm. By the time they've got to us, most of the time they've got basic multiplication, addition, subtraction skills. They're all under there. For me, it was lockdown, first lockdown, and I'm homeschooling my now 7-year-old who was 5.5 reception year one. How do I teach that 2 + 3 = 5? Because it's just so instinctive for us to do 2, 3, 5. It's just, and trying to get my head around the bits that she couldn't. I mean, she's quite a fairly able mathematician with a mathematician for a mother. She's fairly not got major issues there, but just how they approached it. They were much better at the equals sign, Athel, you'll be pleased to hear. They had questions that had 2 + 3 = 5, but they also had them doing something equals 2 + 3. They had the sign going, the sum going both ways, so that we didn't have the equals means solve the question, equals means the two things are in balance. But yeah, that was an eye opener. I still don't think I can get my head around it totally because it's just so instinctive. But to see how they're learning at primary school, so that when they get to us at secondary level, we know where they've come from. Then grid method was a new one for me, not recently, but a few years ago when grid method was coming out as a multiplication skill. I still did my multiplication by long multiplication, just because that's the way I was taught it, and it was instinctive. But not, and I had to learn how they were being taught how to multiply earlier, so that I could then use it to adapt to my students now. Now I would tend to multiply by grid, just because that's easier and it works with algebra and other things. But yeah, I think, again, one of those sessions I'd have liked to have got to if I could duplicate myself.
It was absolutely brilliant.
That technology, that will be a winner.
It was like Kirsty, is it Kirsty the Expert Extreme? It was just to a whole nother level, this idea of I just know what 4 is. But being asked a question, so is 4 a noun? Or I think they asked, is it a noun or an adjective, I think. And we had to think about sort of what it meant to be 4. And just to that level, it's just, you know, thoughts I know the answer, but I've never thought about it at that level. So the Cursed Expert really kicked in, and I couldn't explain or articulate what I was thinking. And to listen to other people able to articulate what this number 4 really meant, what it is, really, really powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely love early maths. That is, and I try and bring, even thinking about A-level, so I've had, today actually, a year 7, she'd been introduced to some of the interior angle in a triangle, like 180 degrees and 360 degree in a quadrilateral, and I'm already using the things like 360 degrees is something we've come up with, 360 units of something, but it's actually a full turn. So think in terms of a full turn, a half turn, a quarter turn. I'm using that language. So when it comes to A-level maths, it's 2 pi is the full 2 pi radians, half of 2 pi radians. So I'm already thinking, and with vectors, pretty much in the beginning state, using virtual manipulators, you can get these arrows. We roll some dice and play these dice games, and I'll use it with my pen, actually. So if you get the number 3 has got a length of 3, and then that's got a length of 3, so 3 + 3. So I'm already introducing directed numbers as soon as possible. And then you get snakes and ladder type games, which is basically vectors in 2 dimensions. So you start on the bottom left and eventually you get to the bottom top right. So then you can formalize that. But yeah, it's all very... And teaching the earliest maths is really, really complicated and much harder than you think it is. But, you know, if you do it right and with a forward-facing approach, it can be very... Yeah, there's so many things that you don't need to fix later on, you know, if they are already comfortable with vectors and turns and so on.
Absolutely. You mentioned vectors there. We had a session with Mark Heslop talking about the Casio calculator.
Oh, I love that.
He went through a lot of different functions on that Casio class quiz. And some of them, well, I like to think of myself as a bit of a technology buff, but dear me, there's some things there I didn't know. So, for example, do you know the table mode that you have on a calculator to use it perhaps for trial and improvement? So you're able to put in an equation and then select start from 1, end at 10, step up in the steps of 1. But then, I didn't know this, if you scroll to the bottom of that table, you can get a new line. But then if you press plus, it'll continue that table using the step. If you press minus, it'll do it the other way. But you can also type in your own numbers and it'll try them as well. So you can continue the table using the numbers that you've selected, not just the ones that you've pre-selected. So I've tried that today with my year 11s on the trial and improvement question. And you can see them looking at each other thinking, oh, wow, this is a game changer. So there's little things like that. There's also a digit separator option in the settings, which just makes reading large numbers a pleasure. So that session was absolutely full.
You made me get it out.
Yes.
Good.
Slides, please.
Yeah. I know. That was mind-blowing.
We need to have
slides, please, yeah.
Boolean maps. That's it. That's trial and improvement is kind of gone from the English users, so it's quite nice to hear that it's still going in the Welsh board, but not really much in the English board.
Okay, yeah, it's still a four marker, it's still a popular question over here.
Wow. It's all iteration now with the English board, but yeah, I mean, following on from, I did the binomial distribution critical regions. I did that as a year 13 revision lesson, and you know, I kind of adapted to what Mark was saying, but it was like, instead of going, like you said, specific values, I went from 0 up to 8. But the thing is, like, the first column, it goes from 1 to 9. So it's like, right, let's do the upper tail, let's do the lower tail. So lower tail, just read the middle column. The upper tail, you can read the left-hand column, because you can say, you know, it's x is greater than or equal to 9, which is 1 minus x is greater, less than or equal to 8. And the students were saying, like, wow, that's a game changer. So there, for them, like after the end of today's session on binomial distribution, hypothesis testing, they were like, I think we'll stick to critical region now. Don't want to do the other method. So, I just want to thank Mark and the team. That, you know, just pick up little nuggets like that. It's just, it's marvellous, really. Yeah.
But just to be careful with some of those tables, especially in the statistics mode. That the display doesn't round them off correctly. It truncates the number.
It truncates, yeah. But I think they give you an allowance. I think they do allow a truncating one if you need to. So I think there's less of an issue. But yeah, no, that was period 3, and then I suppose period 4, and then led the world on period 4. So, I don't think any of you went to my period 4 workshop, didn't you?
Give it so, now. Yeah. We've got just screen share that you can, yeah.
Well, I suppose. So, am I allowed to screen share?
No, you can't. No, I was kidding. But if you can screen share bits of it, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh, this could be interesting. So the bits I was doing. So let me just.
You should
give it a go.
So
the bit I was literally giving him a task was something like this. It was. So you've got these kind of questions, and you think. So what I've done was I did what is called, and I apologise, Mel and Seeger, okay, I call it the crossover, because they're known for doing the GC Foundation Higher crossover. But what I'm kind of trying to do is kind of do a little project with the inspiration of them, is to kind of do like a GCSE A-level kind of crossover kind of thing. So what I've done is I've selected a few topics. And some of your task is to determine whether these questions are GCSE or A-level. So I'm going to give you guys just to think, you know, if you look at question 1, is that a GCSE question? Is it an AS question? Or is it an A-level question?
Could you make the view just a little bit bigger, if it's possible, to just fill it up? Because on Twitter it's... Oh, that's nice, yeah, because your indices are a little bit tight, small, okay.
Yeah. So is that GCSE or is it A-level or AS?
Could be both, really.
I want to say A just simply for the second part on that one. The first part I would have thought was a normal, could have been on GCSE paper, but dealing with the 4 to the power and recognising that that's 2 to the power of 2 to the... I would have thought that was more of an AES, A-level type.
Okay.
I'm going to say I feel like that could be in the GCSE at the moment, that second part as well. I could imagine seeing that as a last question on the GCSE.
That's true. I'm judging by the grin on his face that I'm probably...
yeah, I'm going to change my eyes so I'm watching his expression now.
I've seen the second one.
I'm grinning because it's just quite amusing to see.
It's an high GCSE. I've seen it.
It's a very high GCSE if it's there.
It's definitely an high GCSE.
And it's early A-level if it's there, if it's an A-level one. But yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
So that question is it's an AS question from November 2020. So it's from Pearson. So, but if you look at that, you think, you know, could you ask that to a year 11 pupil?
Part A, yeah. Smart year 11, part B, maybe.
So I'm convinced part B you could still do it. I still think you can.
I think that, I'm not sure all of mine would, because they wouldn't spot to make 4-2 to the power of 2. And then raise that again. Not without being modelled it first in an example.
Yes.
I've seen a tutor do it, that's something you could do, then they could mimic it. But if they hadn't seen a question like that before, I think at least most of my students would panic.
Yeah. Yeah. So pick one more. I'll pick one more question because I don't want to bother too much time. Let's go for a different topic. Let's go for...
I'm going to do this topic again, Matt.
Oh, should you do every triangle? Let's look at this question. Question 3. Is that an A level, an AS level, or a GC question?
What Nathan would approve of for interviewing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the GCSE students will have done CERDs and will have done area of a triangle using half AB sine C, but probably not together. Not unless it was right at the top end of the GCSE paper.
Okay.
Potentially. Whereas it's more familiar to an A-level student who's got a bit more used to handling CERDs. But that's not to say it's not a GCSE. Question 20 out of 21 or something like that, isn't it? Depending on exam board and length of exam.
Well, I could see it on the IGCSE paper, definitely, at Excel or the Cambridge one. There's no reason for it not to be in a GCSE because they do CERDs and do the half AB sine C, as Ellen is saying. So interview those and you get that question.
I think Gareth looks like he's actually working out the answer.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. But it's good. Yeah.
Live maths. Excellent.
I'm not awake enough at this point of the evening to do the actual maths.
What does Gareth think? Do you reckon it's quite interesting?
It's interesting, isn't it? It's the area of a triangle. And is it to find the blue then? Is it?
And if you're going to be really...
Yeah.
If you're going to be really... half AB sine C, if this was the non-calculator paper... You've got exact values of trig.
60 degrees, yes.
Is it 60? You could have that as sine 60. Well, yeah, we're on sine, aren't we? Sine 60.
Only thing I would say is 5 marks looks a bit stingy to me here. A lot of work. There's a lot of work to be done.
Right, shall we really answer then? So it's from 2018. It is in November. So it is a GCSE paper. So it's paper 1 from AQA and it's question 26.
So it's non-calculator.
It was non-calculator. So
that's horrible.
It's a really horrible question, isn't it?
But, please tell me it was 20 out of 21 or something like that. Something really low.
But it's like, that's an AS question. That's an A-level question. And you think, you know, man, it's scary. So, that was kind of the second half of the workshop. And then the first half of the workshop. And I'll see if I can get... this is what I've done. So if I... I've got quite a few people asking about this. So if I kind of share this bit, let me just get to this bit. What I've done is, so this is what I call the crossover. So what I've been is I've done a bit of, sort of, I've looked through different parts of the GCSE and A-level curriculum for England, and kind of looked at, compared the different specs, you know, the A-level spec and the GCSE spec, and found that these, so for example, these are the first 15 topics that are both A-level and GCSE. So for year 12 specifically, you've got topics like, you know, obviously laws of indices, surds. So you can see why people mostly start on surds and quadratics, because it's very, very early on, the A-level spec. And then you kind of get towards simultaneous equations, inequalities. But if you kind of go on, you know, it is still very algebra heavy, but then you get towards the sine wall, cosine wall, area of triangle, transformation of graphs, exponential graphs. There's a lot of areas. See, what I've found so far is I found 45 topics, you know, mostly pure, but you've got a bit of stats as well. So you've got like sampling, histograms, average from data. It's still on the A-level spec, average from tables. And then you've got a bit of mechanics like kinematics. So super formulas do appear in the GCSE curriculum. We don't get tested as such on it, but you do get given it. And then you've got displacement time graphs, velocity time graphs. So that's just year 12, 45 topics in year 12. And then in year 13, you've got another further 7 topics that I've found so far. So algebraic fractions, functions, iteration, conditional probability. So kind of like one potentially could be involved in the future is to be forming a project, which, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to sort of make any any claims or something, but I might potentially be involved in writing a book involving, I don't know if any of you have got this book. I'm trying to think. I stop sharing. Not that I'm trying to plug Melon Seeger's book, but this book here, this is the GCSE version, and then there's a KS2 version. I might be involved in doing a bridging one for A level. So yeah, not that I'm trying to plug what I'm trying to do, but that could be a project I might be doing over the next sort of, I don't know, 18-24 months. So yeah, Melon Seeger, if you're watching this you know, please prompt the designer to book an appointment to see me so we can get started. But yeah, no, I've spoken to them and they're quite happy to do a project, something like this. I think it's a really exciting project to come, which I think will really benefit so many students that are interested in taking A-level. So yeah, that's kind of based why I did the workshop. So yeah, I'm happy to do a repeat of that if you want, or...
Yeah, because within tutoring, you get quite a lot of GCSE students, and persuading them to do the jump to A-level, or gearing them up if you know that they're going to be doing the A-level, is always an interesting area. So many tutees, at least for me at GCSE, are the 4-5s, need to get it to go and do something else. But actually, the few higher ones trying to... No, actually, if you do this now, you're going to do it later as well.
Yeah.
Thinks over it. And if you can crack it now... Great.
Absolutely.
With all the topics, as far as I can see, you're going to build on them. You're going to build on quadratic and linear simultaneous equations, which is a higher tier topic, but you're going to do it, and you're going to do it with other things and more complicated versions and as you go up. But if you've got the underpinning skill sorted, then yeah, that's all. Mm. I lost my train of thought in the middle of that. Sorry.
That's all right.
Thursday evening. Yeah, okay, well, we'll start wrapping up there. And I mean, we could keep talking, and I know not all of them are recorded, but I'm going to be inviting the hosts, like yourself, Gareth, hopefully Pete Mattock, who Dave's just mentioned as well, and Matt. We'll be doing a bunch of A-level ones, so hopefully by the time there's a next MathsConf, we can get, you know, that's for me, it's just finding out what the buzz was, who gave talks that were good. Or just anyone who's up for it. My chat live is open to anyone, really. So we keep it going. It's and they're not recorded, but I'm sure there's loads on Teacher CPD College, from like probably over 100 workshops to be watched anyway. So there's plenty to keep us busy. Would you want to? Yeah, you can make the shout out to Pete Mattock, Dave, since you mentioned that on Twitter, yeah, on his birthday.
Oh yeah, no, I just how impressed I was with someone like coming to a conference and giving up your your day. It's lovely to talk about the maths, but it's also work as well. This is our job for many of us, and so to go and deliver a workshop there, it does take a lot of planning, a lot of effort, a lot of time, and to be doing it on a very special birthday as well, for Pete, I thought that was a real commitment to the profession as well. So just want to give him a big shout out for that, and a big thank you for coming along and running again another excellent workshop. So yeah, it's just fantastic to see him and just learn so much, as we always do, but especially on his birthday. Yeah, big shout out.
Yeah, it was a really great workshop. We're out of time, but we haven't discussed it, but I blogged about it, and it was based on his book Conceptual Maths. It will be released, and there will be a Maths Chat Live just for that, so we'll get plenty of airtime for that one. So yeah, thanks everyone for time is our most precious asset, so thanks for giving your time and being on this Maths Chat Live. We'll keep them going, and if you're out there, wherever you are, do come along to the next MassConf. It's in Kettering. I can't remember the date exactly, but do come along. It's a great community. Become part of it. As Mark McCourt says, if every teacher, every tutor, anyone who teaches maths, if we all became friends with each other and got to know each other, that alone would completely transform the maths teaching world. And Dee mentions, 25th of June. Thanks, Dee, in Kettering. So do come along to that. I'll stop the stream now, and then we'll have a very quick goodbye debrief, and thanks again everyone for your time.